Lynn likes the open floor, spinning, puts it up and backs it in. Yes. Sensational play for Jeremy Lynn.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Lynn's sanity continues here in Madison Square Garden.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back to The Fan. Lori Rubenson here with you. Lynn's sanity. I talked about that earlier. Lynn's sanity. 12 years ago, we still remember a couple of good weeks. How will we remember this Knicks team? To talk about all things Knicks and this game and questions looking ahead, where do they go from here, all of that, we bring in Ian Begley from SNY, covers the Knicks, also host of The Putback, a video podcast. Certainly, he does a great job, you should be following him there as well. Hey, Ian, how are you?
Hey, Lori, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm trying to make sense of, there's the season, there's the postseason, there's this game seven, and obviously the Knicks were undermanned. And once OG Anunoby limped off after 5 minutes, you knew it might be hard to win this game. But what do you make of the Knicks, that first half where the Pacers shoot 76% from the field, 67% from 3-point range, out-rebound the Knicks 15-10, how do you explain there's one thing, you're undermanned. It felt like there was just a defensive collapse in that first half.
Yeah, to me, it's hard to explain. And that's why, we could talk about the injuries, but it just seems like the verve, the energy that this team had played with, even when undermanned. I mean, look at game five.
Right.
They played with a lot of energy that night. That didn't seem to be there. Particularly in the first half. I mean, I know they cut it to 7 in the third quarter, and then the turnovers did them in there, but the defensive effort in the first half, it just surprised me. I think we can talk big picture about the idea that they're, set up for success, and they've had, two strong seasons, but particularly this first half, game 7, I think they deserve criticism because they were not at the level that I think you would expect them to be, given the stage and, given what we've seen from them all year.
So, again, we'll stick with the criticisms. We'll get to all the positives in a moment. With this game, the other thing, when you mentioned the turnovers, as much as Tom Thibodeau seemed to, big picture, get more out of this team than I thought was possible, got the most out of the personnel in general, and deserves all that credit. But how is it that we find ourselves in game 7 of the second round of the playoffs, and the Knicks seem a recurring pattern that the Knicks still don't seem to be able to inbounds the basketball consistently or deal with full court pressure? A coach who is so meticulous, the way the players talk about Tom Thibodeau and his preparation, how is that happening in game 7?
Yeah, that was, that did them in, and it's really inexcusable. And this is a team that, when it is playing well, when it's going well, it limits its self-inflicted mistakes, particularly turnovers. And it does a good job protecting the ball. I don't know if you put those four on Thibodeau. I don't know if, you put it on the players, just a lack of focus. But those turnovers, they had four in a two-minute span after cutting it to 7.
Yep.
And Indiana turned those four turnovers directly into 9 points and took control of the game again. So that, to me, was the death blow there. And again, Tom Thibodeau, what you said, Lori, is true in terms of how meticulous he is and how well-prepared he tries to have his team night in and night out. So I don't know if you put that on him as much as it is just the lack of focus from the players.
Talking to Ian Begley about the Knicks and Game 7, and can you describe the both the highs and lows around OG Anunoby in this game, from pregame to giving it a chance and coming out of the game, and maybe what psychological impact that might have had on everyone from the fans and the Knicks players and the Pacers players in terms of an overall feeling of confidence.
Yeah, I think certainly it got the fans fired up. You know, you heard it during intros. You got a very, very loud ovation, and then he hits those two threes early on. And yeah, the building is alive. And players afterward did talk about just how much respect they had for Anunoby, for kind of laying it on the line, even though he was hurt and yep. playing through a live injury. And so, yeah, certainly both of those things were true. But on the other end of the floor, you know, he wasn't moving well. So yeah. defensively, you saw the Pacers kind of take advantage mm-hmm. right away. And Tom Thibodeau said afterward it was his decision, mm-hmm. coach's decision, to take out Anunoby. He didn't think that he looked right. He was, you know, concerned about further injury, and didn't say this, but I have to think too that he saw the offensive possessions from the Pacers in that stretch, and he said, yeah, this is not going to work out well for us today, and he pulled the plug. But I think certainly the lift that he provided, you know, psychologically to his teammates and in the building was palpable. And, you know, you just have to, I think, give OG Anunoby a lot of credit for deciding to give it a go, even though he was obviously nowhere near 100%, nowhere near fully healed in the rehab process on that hamstring.
Yeah, and it felt like, you're absolutely right, defensively he couldn't move. It was clear he was on one leg and playing with an injury, and it did feel like the right thing. He was a liability. They needed to get him off the court. And it, you know, my son, credit to this Pacers team. They played well, and ultimately, with all the Knicks' injuries, the Pacers were certainly the better team, the deeper team. I know this series went to Game 7. It feels almost magical that somehow the Knicks pulled off a Game 5 win. But this Pacers team, to me, felt like a team that was, they are more of a front-running team. They play well when they are confident and have a lead. And they generally, I know they won Game 3 at the end, but they generally are not as good of a team, mentally tough as a team, I think, as the Knicks in tight situations, is the way I would think about it. Did it strike you that once it was clear that OG Anunoby was, basically was, it was the Willis Reed thing. He was going to limp on, limp off, play 5 minutes, hit a couple shots, and that was it. He was mm-hmm. not going to be able to play in this game. He was not going to be able to be a savior defensively against Siakam or Halliburton or any of that. That it did just embolden the Pacers to say, our time, our game.
You know, I was just surprised that the amount of open looks, I don't think they were uncontested looks, but probably define them as open as Indiana got from beyond the arc. But they also hit contested shots. Mm-hmm. And, you give them credit there, particularly, you know, Tyrese Halliburton just seemed very locked in. And I don't know which fan in particular he was yelling at, Celebrity Row, but clearly that whatever happened there got him going because he hit those three threes in a very short stretch in that first half from basically the same spot, got himself open to knock those down. And it was just a really remarkable run. But even in that first half where, you know, they're seemingly making every shot, there were drives where the ball handler for Indiana would just get past the initial defender and would not feel a lot of resistance. Yep. At the rim, and that's not something that you'd seen from this defense regularly. And yeah, it's just, again, was surprising to see the lack of physicality or the ease at which Indiana was able to get quality looks in that first half.
And you've covered some bad basketball and bad basketball teams. How do you view this season? If I ask you for one word to sum it up, what's the first word that comes to mind about this season?
I would say adequate, and I say adequate because I believe this team performed to, you know, what you would expect respect based on its abilities, individual player abilities. Now, you know, they had injuries, and yes, the players who were asked to step in the void of those injuries, I think they played extremely well. So this team showed a togetherness there. But I don't want to, I don't know if you could say exceeded expectations, because this team had a 2-0 series lead on Indiana. They had a 3-2 series lead on Indiana. And so it seemed like that those points that they had in, a clear pass to the conference final, and you don't get there. And look, I know that there's optimism in a general sense. I know there's a foundation to be built upon here. I know Jalen Brunson, you know, has really changed the trajectory of this franchise. All those things are true. But I also wonder, maybe you look back a couple of years from now and you talk about how good of an opportunity this was for this Knick team to really get through the East and get to the finals. You never know what happens in the coming seasons. Other teams get stronger, maybe. Other teams don't have the injury issues the top teams in the East dealt with this time around, Milwaukee in particular. So, yeah, I think this was a missed opportunity for the Knicks, but if you're asking for one word, I would say adequate.
I hear you on, if OG Anunoby were healthy, if he were able to come back healthy, then even if the Knicks might be injured or undermanned, and if Jalen Brunson doesn't break a bone in his hand, yeah, you look at it against the Celtics and say, well, yeah, the Knicks would be an underdog, but who knows? And is Porzingis, how many games is he playing? All that sort of stuff. If looking at Anunoby limping the way he had, even if Brunson hadn't broken his hand and they found a way to win Game 7, with no Anunoby, do you really feel like, you know, I mean, the missed opportunity, to your point, is just to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and, I guess, play to your seed as a second seed. But did you see this team having any shot if they had no Anunoby?
No, I don't think so. But I wonder, too, though, if the Knicks, you know, if they win this series, let's say they win Game 3 and they somehow win the series in 5 games, 6 games, mm-hmm. maybe that gives Anunoby more time to mm-hmm. rehab the hamstring. Yep. He doesn't feel the need to rush back. He's in a better place if he returned in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think, you know, you're right, Lorian, that the biggest element for them against Boston would have been the health of OG Anunoby. Mm-hmm. I certainly agree, and I don't think they would have had a chance without him. I just wonder if the timeline for him would have looked different, and then his health would have been different had they advanced and had he not tried to rush back for Game 7, had he had a few more days there to prepare for an Eastern Conference Finals.
Ian, you know how social media works. So I have some people on social who have added me about Jalen Brunson, and that, well, he showed up, and even before he got hurt, you know, and he admitted he did not play well in Game 7. And so had some people saying, not a superstar. Don't want to hear about Jalen Brunson as an MVP candidate or a superstar after the way he played in Game 7. When you look at Jalen Brunson, the evolution over this season and after Julius Randle went out, what do you see from Jalen Brunson?
Yeah, I see a player who can lead a franchise. I mean, I think, yeah, we could split hairs and kind of parse the definition of a 1A, a not a 1A, a superstar, not a superstar. This is a player who can lead your franchise. And it's not necessarily because he can give you, you know, 40 points on any night that you might need it, but it's because he can make the right play with the ball in his hands, you know, much more often than not. He knows how to keep a group together, both on and off the floor. And I think, you know, those are the elements there. Those are the reasons that this Knick team has been able to turn around since Brunson has been here. So, yeah, we can debate all day about is he in the, you know, upper echelon of the league or not. But the bottom line is the results are what they are. And we've seen the results over the last 2 years. So, I disagree with, you know, taking this today and using it to knock Jalen Brunson down significantly within the landscape of the league. Look, he did not play well. He acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. You needed Brunson to be Brunson today in order for the Knicks to get through. The Knicks did not get that kind of performance today from Brunson. The one thing I thought he said was interesting afterward was, you know, there are games where he struggles early on and then he kind of figures it out as the game goes. Mm-hmm. And even though it was a blowout loss, game six, you did see that second half of game six where he really shot it well. And that didn't carry over in the first half of game seven, but maybe this would have been another instance where he starts to figure things out as the game continues there. Obviously, we'll never know because of the hand injury, but he had shown that kind of a tendency, that pattern in some of these games here where later on he kind of knew what he wanted to do, had a better feel for the game, and was more effective. Would that have happened today? Who knows? But obviously, if it did, we would be having a different conversation.
Of all the players, when you look back and think about the season, let's put Brunson aside, and we saw him emerge into a superstar. But of the other players, whether that's Dante DiVincenzo, Isaiah Hartenstein, Josh Hart, Deuce McBride, of the other players on this team, whose leap in terms of player development impressed you the most?
Well, I would say Dante DiVincenzo, not necessarily a player development, but just what he was able to produce, particularly when there was no Julius Randle, there was no OG Anunoby, and the Knicks were doing everything they could to just tread water. Mm-hmm. DiVincenzo was such a major part of that. His shooting was remarkable. I mean, he played, to me, I don't know anyone who had expectations of him getting to this level. And I don't know if maybe he did, but he, to me, exceeded everyone's expectations by the way he played, particularly in that stretch. So that's a player that I look at when you talk about, you know, development. And you talk about Deuce McBride, too, because of his trajectory in the organization. Was not even in the rotation at the start of the year. Injuries gave him that opportunity. He ran with it, and he ended up being a significant part of the success that they had in this series. You know, he starts game five, and the Knicks obviously play well in that game. And, you know, McBride was a big part of their success, their ability to hang on there despite all these injuries. So that's another kind of success story that I look at when you talk about players who've developed well.
Yeah, if their agents had that expectation, I think their contracts would both be higher. Mm-hmm. When you did the post game today, whether that was Tom Thibodeau or any of the players, whose remarks, give us one remark that stood out to you the most out of all the post game conversations?
It's Jalen Brunson. You know, he could have talked about how, you know, the Knicks were so challenged this season and they, you know, maybe exceeded expectations based on injuries, and he could have called this season a success based on that. But he was asked about, you know, given what the Knicks did, given the circumstances, given where they reached, was this season a success? He did not hesitate. He said no. And then he was asked later, you know, why did he think that? He said, were we close to a championship? Did we win a championship? So that to me, I didn't have any real doubt before hearing this, but it just stood out to me that in that setting, in a place where he could have kind of waxed poetic about how much this group fought and why you might see this season as a success, he told you very clearly, very succinctly, that it was not a success in his mind. And to me, that's the mindset that you want your top player to have, because he sets the tone for everybody else in the group.
Question from from a couple of my followers on Twitter before I let you go on X. One of them wanting to know, you know, as the Knicks look ahead, free agents, all the draft, all of that, what do you envision happens with Julius Randle? Do you envision that he would be packaged with draft picks and they're trying to trade him for, you know, some other player, or do you envision that he will be with the Knicks next season?
Yeah, I think in the right deal, in a trade where the Knicks feel like they're getting the best player in the deal and a player who can, you know, push them to that next level, I don't think Julius Randle would be off limits in that deal. But I do think one thing we have to remember with Randle, he was very much a part of this team in January
yep.
when it just had such an incredible month with OG and OB
mm-hmm.
and with everyone healthy. He seemed to fit in really well to the role that was needed of him with all the different personnel on the floor. And I think that's the key here. Can he come back and be a player who, you know, can not slide underneath, but just fit into where an approach where Jalen Brunson's going to have the ball. It starts with Brunson clearly, and there's a clear hierarchy underneath him. Can he fit into that role where maybe he's not getting, you know, the amount of shots that he had gotten over the past few seasons? Maybe he's asked to play a more supportive role to Brunson. Is he comfortable with that? Can he do that? If he can, I think everything will work really well. But I think that's one of the questions that you have to think about when you think about Randle's future. And, you know, don't forget about what happened in January when we're talking about Julius Randle.
The last question then, also from one of my followers on social, wants to know, you know, in terms of the Knicks and the draft, they haven't obviously been heavy into the draft in the last, recently, obviously Deuce McBride, Quentin Grimes, players like that. But they have the two first-round draft picks. What do you anticipate happens with the draft and the Knicks, especially for a coach like Tom Thibodeau, who, you know, doesn't always want to give a ton of minutes to rookies?
Yeah, you know, on Thibodeau, I would say that there are young players here, McBride being one of them, who have, you know, thrived under Thibodeau. But I think, Lori, by and large, what you're saying is correct. It just doesn't – you look at this rotation, you look at the players who you can kind of pencil in coming back and who you would expect to return, at least I do, OG Anunoby and Isaiah Hartenstein. And where are the minutes for a first-round pick? Where's the opportunity for a first-round pick? If you're the Knicks, are you comfortable using an asset like that has such value – and drafting a player and not really playing him at all in next season and just seeing it as a developmental project, seeing the player as a developmental project, I can't see that. I think the more valuable use of that for this team at the moment is in a trade. And so I think it's more likely to be what we've seen in the past with the Knicks on draft night, where they're using those picks in a way to free up salary for something else or in a bigger deal. And I think that's much more likely than it is for them to make these selections and bring the rookies onto the roster for next season.
All right. So in other words, people should continue to follow the the off season and the draft and free agency. There may be a lot of activity with the Knicks. Ian Begley covers the Knicks and the NBA for SNY. Ian, really appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
That sounds great, Lori. Thanks.